This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up today, we're doing something a bit special. We're going to take a behind-the-scenes look at the work of the Family Research Council team. Now, I know you all get to hear me every day cover the issues that are important to us here at the Family Research Council and to families across the nation. So you probably have a sense of what it is we do, but maybe not so much how we do it. There is a lot more than what meets the eye, or ear in the case of radio, since so many of you who listen to this program care about our country and preserving our freedoms. I wanted you to hear from the folks here on our team who do this work tirelessly, working to advocate for the values that you care about. And probably more importantly, share with you what you can do to be a part of the effort. Because I can tell you right now, we cannot succeed without you. So with that in mind, let's get right to it. Remember, the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's program, more about the Family Research Council, at TonyPerkins.com. And if you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. Well, my first guest today do a phenomenal job leading our team and the work that we do on Capitol Hill. David Christensen is our Vice President for Government Affairs. And Mandy Ancaye is our General Counsel for Government Affairs as well. Every day, they navigate the, complicated waters of Congress, which is not for the faint of heart. But I think they'll tell you that they enjoy it. David, Mandy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
Thanks for having us.
Well, let me give a little background on both David and Mandy. David previously worked as legislative assistant for former Representative Congressman David Weldon from Florida. In that position, David handled legislation on issues related to bioethics, such as human cloning, as well as pro-life issues and foreign policy. Before moving to Washington, David worked as an education manager and assistant editor at the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity in Illinois, where he worked on issues related to end-of-life care, human cloning, and biotechnology. Mandy at FRC, she is responsible for analyzing the constitutionality and the legality of pending legislation, regulations, executive orders, and lobbies on various issues, including family values and religious liberty. So her portfolio is full. Previously, she served as Director of Public Policy for Liberty Council Action. So I just wanted to give you, our listeners, kind of a background on some of the outstanding individuals we have here at FRC. We've got a team of almost 80 people that do a lot of work each and every day. And Mandy, I'm going to start with you. What is a typical day? Well, I say typical. Nothing's typical in this city. But what does a typical work day look like for you?
Well, like you said, nothing's typical, but we do have a lot of meetings on Capitol Hill with the staff of members of Congress. Sometimes we're actually, now that Trump is in office, at the executive office of the White House, having meetings with White House staff as well, and just really trying to get values issues before their eyes and ears and helping them to be aware of some of the issues that folks around the country are facing.
So what's the greatest challenge you face on a day-to-day basis?
That's an interesting question. I think just making sure that representatives, congressmen from states across the country are well aware that people in their districts agree really with what Family Research Council is pushing with reigniting a desire for morality, for biblical values to be accepted throughout the country, and just really ensuring that religious liberty is protected as well, to ensure that, you know, people can go forth and share the good news of Christ.
Well, David, things have changed a little bit in the last 6 months here in Washington, D.C. Still challenges, but challenges of a different sort.
Yeah, I think before the last few years with the President Obama in office, I think we were playing a lot of defense, but trying to hold our guys firm on pro-life issues or issues related to religious liberty, et cetera. Still doing a lot of briefings and meetings, as Mandy said, educating them, reading legislation, but trying to get them to act on good pro-life or religious liberty legislation, even though they knew the president wasn't going to sign them into law. We thought that had a positive benefit on impact in the states. And then states could actually get those things through, which they did. Now we have an opportunity to get these things across the finish line to the president's desk. I think the healthcare repeal and replace bill is a good example of that. You worked really hard, Tony, and FRC did, to ensure that the 2015 bill to repeal Obamacare also defunded Planned Parenthood. That passed. The Senate passed it. President Obama vetoed it. Now, obviously, anybody who's paying attention knows how hard it is not just to repeal Obamacare, to replace it. We're working really hard to do that. Suddenly, Republicans decide they have their own views of how that should look. And so we're continuing to do briefings. Mandy on a different issue testified on religious freedom protections, the Free Speech Fairness Act regarding the Johnson Amendment. There's a lot going on, even more so now, I think, than before. It's a challenge, but we can see, I think, a green light that we need to be able to move forward and to get these things accomplished.
So you say now more on the offense rather than defense. Is there an opportunity here to kind of take back ground that was lost in the last 8 years?
Absolutely. No question about it. I think we have an opportunity to undo a lot of damage from Obamacare and abortion funding, and the number of babies have been killed because of that law, the kind of health care rationing, the increased premiums. Religious freedom has been just decimated. And Mandy, maybe you want to chime in on that. You're working on a lot of those issues. But we have a lot of opportunities. Mandy?
Yeah, I've actually heard from the Department of Interior not too many weeks ago about Dr. Snelling, who actually recently got his permit to do some archaeological digs in the Grand Canyon area. We've seen Don Vanderboon have some success with the Department of Agriculture and working towards ensuring that other businesses, other meatpacking owners, plant owners, don't face the same kind of criticism and discrimination that he faced when the White House under President Obama basically told him that either he needed to keep his biblical views out of his own business or essentially be put out of business. So,
you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along this afternoon. A special kind of look behind the scenes here at the Family Research Council. Got a number of our team joining us today just to kind of give you an idea, you know, what we do kind of from the conversation we have every day on radio, but maybe not how we do it. And David is the vice president of our government affairs, and Mandy serves as general counsel, working to look at the legalities and the constitutionality of a lot of the stuff we work with. I want to ask both of you this question. Is the issue of relationships, how important are relationships when you're on Capitol Hill?
I think they're absolutely essential. And, you know, Mandy's been in this town for a while. I've been here since 2001. And frankly, as a Hill staff, former Hill staffer, and then working here at FRC for some time, we've developed a lot of relationships with a lot of member offices, House and Senate offices. Frankly, some of the people that I knew during the Bush years are now in the White House under President Trump. And those relationships and that trust is something you build up, and you don't always agree, but mm-hmm. you know, you have to be able to know who to call, what information to provide when. You know, Mandy's got good relationships on the Hill. We're in meetings, once a week with, 40 or some staff. We're providing mm-hmm. information. Our policy team, we get them that information. And
I think, too, not only our relationships with members of Congress and with the White House, but the folks that listen to your radio program, their relationships with their members of Congress are so important as well. There's no individual that's more important to a member of Congress than his or her constituents. And so knowing where the constituent stands and ensuring that constituents are building those relationships with members of Congress is really invaluable as we push values issues up on the Hill.
And that's actually what gives the Family Research Council, gives you guys as you go on the Hill, as I go on the Hill, gives us the influence with the members of Congress, is that they know that we have a constituency that's their constituency. And when we talk about scoring a vote, meaning that we're going to publish that vote and send it out to our constituents, that gets their attention, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and I think that point that Mandy made is so crucial. There, we have relationships. Our job is to know exactly what's going on the Hill. The average, you know, American can't keep up with all that. But when we inform you, whether it's through Tony's radio program or alerts or whatnot, then members, believe it or not, actually care about what their constituents think, and it is really important for constituents to weigh in. to provide their member information. And members are always asking us when we're going to score something because they know that that's going to get out to their constituents and they really do care about that.
And it enables the constituents to hold the member accountable as well. So when we produce that scorecard, they know that if they don't want to have a 100% with FRC action, then that's something to be concerned about once they go home and have town halls and are gearing up for election season as well.
Let me just chime in real quick and say that it is, you know, my dad, one time I called him and I said, "Hey, did you call your member of Congress?" And he said, "Oh, I'm so busy. I don't have time." And he's no good anyway. I said, "Dad, if you don't call your member of Congress, somebody from Planned Parenthood is. Somebody from one of these liberal organizations is. They need to hear from you." And I just want to encourage you. It is important if you're listening. You've got to weigh in with your members of Congress. This is a democracy. We have a biblical duty to do the best that we can in this democracy. So it actually has an impact, and I just want to encourage people on that. That's so important.
So walk us through that from a standpoint of, you know, I know we do petitions. Petitions have influence. Phone calls have influence. I think the greatest leverage is actually a relationship with a member if you happen to know them, or you go to a town hall meeting and you ask a question respectfully. I think that has influence. Walk somebody through the process. So some may be intimidated by making a phone call to Capitol Hill when we put out the switchboard number. I mean, what happens? I mean, how does that work? Who answers the phone? What do they say? Just walk them through the process.
Having actually answered some of those phone calls when I worked on the Hill, I usually have a lower level staffer who takes the calls and writes down your name and address and information and takes your position on a bill. Every constituent who calls in, that information gets logged into a computer system and they generate letters back to their constituents to tell them where they are on any piece of legislation or amendment. That is something they know. They actually provide. They send literally thousands of letters back to their constituents. And quite frankly, what's really helpful to Mandy and I is sometimes our constituents will call, even like someone who's a liberal senator. When they get the letter back and forward that back to us here at FRC, that lets us know what the senators or members are telling their constituents and helps us adjust our arguments and amendments or, you know, whatever kind of information we're providing. So they log all of that information, and members of Congress want to know where the constituents are. What are they hearing about? That's really important.
And of course, when we make those phone calls, we need to be respectful, kind, because sometimes these issues get pretty charged. But as you said, it's just a member of the staff answering the phone.
Yeah, we've been in the offices before when the Capitol switchboards lit up and you see these poor young staffers like getting all frustrated because people are screaming at them on the phone. You know, vinegar doesn't usually do too well at catching flies. So, you know, you want to be friendly but direct and you know, raise your concerns. And that information does get back to the senators and the members.
Well, we appreciate what you guys do each and every day on Capitol Hill. I think representing not just FRC, but families across this nation in an informed, rational, God-honoring way. So I want to say thank you to you and your entire team in the Government Affairs section.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Thank you.
And folks, you can find out more by going to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. And be sure when we put out those email alerts, those text messages, social media messages, and calls to make phone calls. Be sure and do it. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more, a behind-the-scenes look here at the Family Research Council. Don't go away.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. A senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope?
I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
A friend of mine rang my cell phone with this statement.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
I've been asking God to touch a friend to have a heart that's warming toward a relationship with Jesus. My friend related at least three circumstances that have been motivating this mutual friend to explore who Jesus is. You know, it's always fun to see Jesus open up opportunities to introduce himself to someone we've been talking to about him over a long period of time. Many times these moments are catalyzed by environments of grace. The Bible describes these environments characterized as gracious speech and actions toward others. We don't experience much grace in this hectic culture, but environments of grace bring hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website is tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about the Family Research Council right there at the website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins, that's how to keep up with me. All right, today, taking a little bit of a different approach, we talk about the issues each and every day, and so I think you have a sense of what it is that FRC does here in our nation's capital, lobbying for these issues of faith, family, and freedom. But you might not know exactly how we do it. We have a team of close to 80 people here, research analysts, experts, lobbyists. We just heard from David and Mandy, who work on Capitol Hill each and every day. One of the issues that increasingly has become a focal point for the Family Research Council is the issue of religious freedom, both domestically and internationally. And this is a critical issue because I believe all of our other freedoms hinge on this. This is why you hear me talking about this almost daily, because it's been under assault in the last 8 years. Well, one of our team members that really leads the effort on religious liberty is the director of FRC Center for Religious Liberty, Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Just to give you a little more background information on Travis, Travis previously served as a Navy pilot after graduating from the U.S. Naval Academy, where he was a captain of the intercollegiate sailing team and a two-time college sailing All-American. I didn't know that. You like to sail, huh?
Learning new things every day.
Yeah, how about that? So you still take to the water occasionally?
Once in a while.
All right. I stay away from the water. Well, let's talk about religious freedom, something we have in common. This is something that probably I remember when you joined the team here, we didn't think it was going to be the major issue that we focus on, but because everything that is affected by it, it's become a number one issue for us.
Absolutely, it really has. You know, and as we think about it here, as we advocate from a Christian worldview, Christian perspective, we think about the other issues, life or marriage and family, we have views on those, but what if we no longer have the freedom to even express our views on those issues and even voice our opinion? That is the issue of religious freedom, protecting the ability to have that door remain open, the freedom to continue to voice our view on the issues that emanate and come from our Christian worldview. So that's why religious freedom is so important.
Travis, we focus primarily on religious liberty here in the United States. However, we also get involved, as we've seen in some specific cases, and you've traveled abroad on this topic, and you've been a part of a number of initiatives for international religious liberty. Those two are connected, and so they're really inseparable.
Yeah, they are, and this is why we want to advocate for religious freedom for all, both at home and abroad. We have good legal protections in place, basically protecting our ability to have beliefs and to live them out robustly. We want a robust and broad protection for the freedom of religion around the world as a human right for all people and here in the United States. And this is what we're striving for across the board for everyone. And, you know, it's important to keep a focus on this because of the universal nature of this human right around the world and here at home. And as you mentioned, we have had the opportunity to be involved in some specific instances in educating members of the Kurdistan area of Iraq on religious freedom, really seeing some good work done there, even as we continue our work here at home at the same time.
Right. You've been a part of doing training over there in the Kurdistan region of Iraq. We've also advocated for Christians like Miriam Ibrahim and others who have had their freedoms taken away. You've had the opportunity to meet a lot of people whose freedoms have been threatened. What do they say is needed the most?
Yeah, surprisingly, what they often want is support from the Christian community here in the United States, spiritual support, prayer support. They just want to know they're not forgotten. And we often think in terms of material support, money, and those types of things. Obviously, they're going to fight for their freedom, so they care about that. But it's often more important to them, or as important, to know that they're not alone, to know that we understand what they're going through, we're praying for them and remembering them. And I've heard this from a number of folks in the Middle East and elsewhere around the world. These are incredibly strong spiritual people, but they it means so much to them to know that we're not forgetting them.
Given the last 8 years and the number one, I think internationally religious freedom was shoved to the side and was not a focal point of any of our foreign policy. But I think the direct assault on religious freedom here at home, the exercise, I should say, you know, we're not talking about, you know, shutting down churches. And I think the left, you know, when they talk about religious freedom, they want to the freedom to worship within the four walls of a church. We're talking about the free exercise of religion, the ability to live your life according to your faith. And that's what was under assault. That sent a message to what I say, tyrants and terrorists abroad, that it was open season on Christians. It's kind of a new day here in Washington.
Yeah, you know, and we hope to see increasing efforts to protect religious freedom here at home. We're seeing some good steps in that direction, and need to continue to move forward in terms of striving for more freedom and to remain vigilant to protect the freedom we have in the United States and around the world. You know, one of the reasons it's important when we think of it internationally is it's a security issue. You know, religious freedom around the world, not only, you know, we don't only want to advocate for it as a human right because it's the right thing to do, but because practically it's for the benefit of those places, their stability, security, and economic empowerment. For all these reasons, we should be integrating religious freedom into our foreign policy, and we'll continue to try to make sure that happens.
Very quickly, almost out of time, what do our listeners need to do to uphold religious freedom?
Well, I think, you know, they can start with looking at their own life. Where do they have influence? Their friends, neighbors, their place of employment. They can just live out their faith, be bold with their faith, know basically how to explain religious freedom to someone and why it's important, and just be a witness for that at the same time that they are a witness for the gospel. As they do this, we will build a mass movement, and this will motivate people to get involved politically and make their voices heard in the culture too.
Yeah, just live out your faith. If you live out your faith, exercising your freedom, you preserve your freedom. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate what you do as it pertains to our religious liberty.
Thank you, Tony.
And folks, great resource Travis has put together, the Hostility to Religion Report. One of the ways you can be effective in communicating is have the information and the knowledge. You can find out more by going to the website tonyperkins.com and follow the links over. All right, don't go away. We're going to continue taking a look behind the scenes here at the Family Research Council when we return. Don't go away.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Should bankruptcy be an option for a Christian? Well, here's what bankruptcy was designed for. Bankruptcy was designed strictly as a last resort, number one. We know what the Bible says about our obligations to pay our debtors. Regardless of how you feel about that debt, regardless of how big it is, regardless of how long you've had it, you have an obligation to pay the debtor. That, I guess you could call, a consequence to the choice that you've made, and you can't just walk away from it. Now, having said that, there are dire situations. I have talked to folks that have had hospital bills beyond their control, other situations that weren't necessarily a choice that they made, but they've become somewhat of a victim of consequence that they could not have avoided. And bankruptcy has its place, but only as a last resort. I never want to say to somebody, suffer to the point of losing everything that you have if the letter of the law will allow you to work something out by way of a bankruptcy court. But it should never, ever be the first resort. Not in your mind, but from a biblical perspective. You need to make sure that you have exhausted every possible thing. And when you, if you were to ever choose bankruptcy, it's got to be chosen with a heart and a mindset that you have learned from these mistakes, and it's never going to happen again before you were to ever enter in to a bankruptcy situation.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along this afternoon. As I said earlier in the program, kind of stepping back from the day-to-day news, most of you who listen on a regular basis know what we focus on because of what we talk about. But you might not know how we do it. We've got a team. It's not just me behind the microphone. This is just the tip of the iceberg. We've got nearly 80 people that are a part of the FRC team that do a number of things. We've talked about the lobbying team on Capitol Hill. We've had Travis Weber on religious freedom. We've got a communications team that works with the media. We've got our radio team, obviously. We've got our support team, and we've got a number of experts, and one of those is the director for FRC Center for Human Dignity, Irina Grosu. She focuses on the sanctity of human life issues ranging from conception to natural death. Her areas of expertise include abortion, women's health, bioethics, pornography, sex trafficking, and assisted suicide. She has testified before the U.S. Congress. She's testified before state legislatures and has presented lectures at the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women. Irina, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's always a pleasure.
This is one of the big issues. We've increasingly in the last few years dealt a lot with the issue of religious liberty, but life, obviously fundamental, and it's something that we do a lot with here at the Family Research Council. What's a normal day look like for you?
I don't think I have a normal day because so much happens in the news that affects my day in terms of doing interviews or writing, or if there are meetings on the Hill and we need certain research or messaging points for our members of Congress, that kind of drives my day. When the news doesn't drive my day, I'm working on long-term projects, and those take a long time to do. But thankfully, I have the help of interns and others who can input information, and that information we can get out to members of Congress and universities and to the media as well.
Irina, are you encouraged by what you see happening across America as it pertains to the life issue?
Definitely, especially now with the new administration. We are so encouraged and impressed by the Mexico City policy, which we call it the 2.0 version,
right.
Since $9 billion worth of money is going to be affected and won't go towards promoting abortion overseas or committing abortion. So we're really happy with the Trump administration and all they've done to protect life. We're also really encouraged by the number of
pro-life bills that have passed, especially in the last 10, 15 years. And a lot of people know a lot more about Planned Parenthood because of the videos that have come out. And so we're really encouraged at the state level and also at the federal level.
Yeah, I think if my memory serves me correct, about two-thirds of the pro-life bills that have passed since Roe v. Wade in the last 41, 42 years, two-thirds of those have passed just in the last 10 years.
That's right. And so this is happening across the board. Planned Parenthood facilities and other abortion facilities are closing down left and right. New regulations are coming out, especially, for example, the dismemberment bans, where the 20-week ban is now in 20-some states, and we're looking to pass a federal ban as well. So we're very encouraged. It seems that on the life issue, more and more people are becoming pro-life, and the states are passing pro-life legislation.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong or give me your opinion. You can't correct my opinion, but you can you can give me your opinion. I think that we, in the very near future, could see America becoming a predominantly pro-life nation again. I think we could see Roe v. Wade overturned by the courts and this issue sent back to the states and the vast majority of states choosing life.
I totally agree. I foresee that Roe v. Wade will be overturned in my lifetime. And what we have to do is prepare for that to happen. What pro-life policies do we have in place at the state level to ensure that women are given the care they need and the children that they have so that we can create a pro-life nation, not just by overturning Roe v. Wade and by shutting down abortion facilities, but by truly creating a pro-life environment for women, children, and families.
And that's going to include a reforming of our adoption laws to make it easier for families to adopt children domestically, so that these women who choose to have their babies because the laws reflect that will have a place to give their if they don't want to keep their children, they can give them up to safe and reasonable adoptions.
Exactly. And I think even we have to reform the foster care system.
Yes,
and also really encourage, especially Christians, to consider adoption, to consider foster parenting. This is very important in building a culture of life, that we support these children that have been born. But I do see that this is a time, I think a lot of people have been hurt by abortion, whether people themselves have had abortion or someone very close to them have had abortion. And the science is so strong on embryology. We have a window into the womb, and so we want to encourage those laws to pass and to encourage a life culture of life.
Irina, 30 seconds. What can our listeners do to get more involved in building this culture of life?
They should continue to stay involved. Go to frc.org. You can stay in touch with me on Twitter at Irina Grosu. But really stay close to our update stories because we have the pulse on what's going on and when you should call your members of Congress to support pro-life bills that are coming out as they come out.
Irina Grosu, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate all that you do on behalf of life.
Thank you so much. It's an honor.
All right. More to come, folks. Don't go away. There's still more of the team that's going to be stopping by so you can get a glimpse, or I should say earshot, of what's happening behind the scenes here at the Family Research Council, those that make it happen each and every day here in Washington, D.C. Don't go away. We're right back after that.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website twholyland.com for more information. twholyland.com, or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES. families, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
We're collecting stories of how God is using American Family Radio in the lives of our listening family. These small stories serve as big encouragement to those who partner with us financially and to those who are considering partnering with us. Would you take a moment to call right now and tell us your story of how we've impacted your life? Phone 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893.
Hi, this is Ray Comfort. What can I say about American Family Association? They're a voice in the wilderness that's not afraid of the king, a burning and a shining light in a world that's becoming darker and darker. May God bless this wonderful organization of faithful Christians who've given their time and energies to further the kingdom of God. Congratulations, American Family Association, on 40 years of faithfulness. I pray that God will give you an even stronger voice in the future to make an eternal difference for millions.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website is tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about the Family Research Council right there at the website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins, that's how to keep up with me. Today, taking a step back from the daily routine of news, if you are a frequent listener, you know what we deal with here, but you might not know how we deal with it. And that's what we're doing today, kind of taking a look at a few members of our team here. We've got about 80 people that work on various aspects of the mission here at the Family Research Council. We've looked at, talked to a couple of folks that work on Capitol Hill, some of our policy experts, and we're going to also talk to the executive director of FRC Action in just a few moments. But first, one of the areas that we've been doing a lot of work in the 14 years that I have been at the Family Research Council is with churches and pastors, as we have our Watchmen on the Wall Pastors Network, where we've got thousands of pastors across the nation who are committed to praying for our nation, preaching the Word of God as it pertains to the issues of our day, and partnering with other pastors to bring about the transformation of America. And one of the key components of that is what we call our culture impact teams. And I want you to know a little bit more about that, and to help me in that process to explain those to you and how you can be a part, I'm actually going to bring on our culture impact team coordinator, John Menendez. John has over 42 years in ministry as a pastor, a church planner, a denominational leader. He's played key roles with Promise Keepers as vice president of the National Association of Evangelicals. Today, John is considered among the top Hispanic national leaders in the U.S. Evangelical Church. He has a passion to educate pastors and their churches on their role to restore, defend, and protect Christian biblical values in our country. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I'm so happy to be here with you and also be a part of the FRC vision.
Well, you have been traveling. In fact, you're on the road right now. You travel the country working to educate and equip lay persons in the church to lead these culture impact teams. Let's start first, John. Explain to our listeners what a culture impact team is.
The cultural impact team, I think, looking at it from a bigger perspective, it's probably one of the most effective grassroots efforts that I have seen taking place in the church. It starts with the vision of a pastor, the blessing of a pastor, who wants to engage his church in impacting his community and his culture, and raising people, identifying individuals within his church to empower them to be that resource of information of things taking place in the community, in the culture, in the public policy of the area, and resourcing the church with information, empowering them with ways in which they can get engaged and be salt and light in their communities.
Now, we have at present over 7,000 local churches that have these culture impact teams. You know, give us, you know, a couple of examples of how these teams have affected change in their communities.
There are so many examples of happening throughout the U.S. Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Gal in local church talked to her pastor saying, the school district has introduced a curriculum of same-sex marriage, and we really don't want it. We don't want to talk to our kids. And they got together with their pastor. Their church got mobilized. They contacted us, gave us information on, asked us for information on how to get engaged. And they, together with a number of other churches, got together and went and spoke with the school district. And so 50, 60 Christians got together and went to the school district meeting and opposed the curriculum that was being introduced. And the school district backed off. That's one way that they've gotten engaged. Another very notable example is Chino Hills, California, with Gina Gleason, who has been engaged in mobilizing her church and other churches to be salt and light. The city council had decided that they would not pray in the name of Jesus in your honor. And Chino Hills Church got together and they bought thousands of T-shirts that simply said, "Hey, we pray in Jesus' name." They showed up to the city council and likewise put in a request that they not only continue to pray at their gatherings, but also pray in Jesus' name. And when the city council saw the overwhelming presence of churches and Christians, pastors who were there, they reversed their decision. And not only prayer, but also prayer in Jesus' name was restored to in the city council. Those are two just very extreme examples from one part of the country to another that cultural impact teams are helping the local church be salt and light in their communities.
You're listening to Washington Watch. John Mendez, my guest in this portion of the segment. He is the national coordinator for our culture impact teams. John, how can we just got about a minute or so left. How can our listeners that might be interested, or maybe a pastor that's listening, how can they start a culture impact team in their church?
They can visit our website, just culturalimpactteams.org, and click on for a request for information, and we will immediately contact them. Or call also at FRC and request for information, and we will immediately get information to them on how to organize a cultural impact team training for their church. We have several of them taking place throughout the nation, in various parts of the nation throughout the year, so they can also come together and listen to the training and the briefing that we have in various parts of the country.
All right, John Mendez, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you're out on the road helping people get those culture impact teams set up, so we appreciate it greatly, and great to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Tony. God bless.
And folks, you can also, if you'd like to know more about it, just email me, tony@tonyperkins.com. And I'll make sure we get that information to John. He'll follow up with you, and we'll give you the resources you need to get you the material. It's basically a turnkey operation. We give you the guidelines, we lay it all out, how you can set it up. And then there's you can do a number of things. And it's designed to reflect the focus of the church. In terms of it encourages cultural engagement. It's not just, you know, when it comes to public policy. It's also maybe adopting a local school, being out there, and it's getting beyond the four walls of the church. So anyway, if you'd like to know more about how to start a culture impact team, email me, tony@tonyperkins.com, or go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and follow the links over. Now, one of the ways that the culture impact teams do work is that they are regularly, every year, most of them, are doing voter registration, because part of impacting the culture is through the political process, and you've got to be registered, you've got to be informed, you've got to be voting. And so they not only register people, but they will also put out voter guides for local and state and national elections. And that's where the sister organization of the Family Research Council comes in. That's FRC Action. And the executive director of FRC Action is Brent Kylan. Brent, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, good to be with you today.
Now, Brent, in his role as the executive director of FRC Action, he oversees the voter education, grassroots mobilization projects, as well as the political efforts of FRC Action PAC and the Faith Family Freedom Fund. From an early age, he has had an interest in history as well as both state and national policymaking. Brent spent over 4 years in the Michigan State Legislature as a legislative aide and policy director, where he managed constituent services and the drafting and advancement of legislation. He attended Northwood University. He worked with the Republican National Committee during George W. Bush's presidential race in 2004. And has assisted with numerous gubernatorial, congressional, state legislative, and ballot initiative campaigns. He currently lives right outside D.C. in Virginia. You know, we were just talking to John Mendez about the culture impact teams, and there is a relationship there with FRC Action.
Absolutely. At FRC Action, as the legislative affiliate of Family Research Council, there's really three areas that we are trying to influence. The first is elections, with being that salt and light in every area of culture that John was talking about, getting values voters to the polls to vote their values, and also getting good candidates elected. The second one is public policy, working with legislators and their staffs, keeping them up to date on these issues, keeping them accountable, having our scorecard tools like that. And then the third one is equipping activists, people like the listeners to this show, Tony, giving them the tools so that they can impact public policy and impact elections.
Brent, now some might say, well, you know, Christians, we shouldn't have that kind of stuff in our churches. We shouldn't be involved in that kind of stuff. What do you say to that?
I think one important angle to look at that from is the fact that a lot of us might not even be interested in politics, but politics will always be interested in us. And this stuff is going to impact us. You talk about things from a really practical aspect of the regulations on your church building or your home or your business to very important cultural issues about the values. Yeah. Family values, life, those types of issues. I think, Tony, we can't afford not to get involved.
Yeah, I mean, these are very practical things. I mean, as I'm pastoring this church, I've encountered a zoning ordinance that said I couldn't put a sign up out in front of our church on our property advertising Vacation Bible School. And of course, I picked up the phone, I called the mayor, and I said, "What's this all about?"
Absolutely,
We got the policy changed. Mm-hmm. But this is very real stuff that impacts what we do, and that's a very simple example, but it's more profound. I mean, it goes to what our kids are taught in school, mm-hmm. through the local school boards. It deals with the state legislature, you know, policies pertaining to life, marriage, and so on and so forth. So if we're not involved, somebody else will be.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's two sides of this that we try to equip people on. The way I like to think about it is an election is an event. Democracy is a process. And our goal at FRC Action is to give people the tools to impact both sides of that. On the election side of things, we do, like I mentioned earlier, get out the vote efforts. Last year in 2016, we did a national bus tour, visited over 20 states, encouraging values voters to get out. We launched some radio ads, some powerful social media videos, that sort of thing. The numbers we have are telling us right now that there's about 38 million people who say they're Christians, their faith is important to them, that are not voting in elections. And about 25 of the 38 million, Tony, are registered to vote and not voting. And think of the impact we could have if they just get out and voted. The other side of it is that process, the democracy, the public policy side of things. That's a hard thing for people to keep track of sometimes because there's so much information out there. How do you sort through all of these news reports and those sorts of things? What we have is we have on our website, frcaction.org, we have our scorecard where we score the U.S. House, the U.S. Senate, their votes on faith, family, and freedom, these important issues. So you can know how is your member of Congress doing. You can hold them accountable. We also have alerts if you sign up for those where when an issue comes up, say it's on the floor of the House, floor of the Senate, or even a state legislative alert, a pro-life bill, a bill that's going to affect family values or religious liberty, we'll send you an alert with the info you need to contact your member of Congress or your state representative and contact info so you can stay involved and make
an impact. So you make it real easy.
That's our goal. Yes, that is our goal. You can find all those tools at frcaction.org.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're kind of riding along with us today, or I guess we're riding along with you, whatever the case may be. But we want to let you know that we appreciate you and your listenership for Washington Watch. And today, kind of a little different, we're stepping back from the daily news to talk about not what FRC focuses on, but how we focus on it. This program, as you, if you're a frequent listener, I'm kind of the tip of the iceberg. We've got a whole team here that's working on a number of issues. And Brent, I want to go back and ask you, as the executive director of FRC Action, the sister organization to FRC, you mentioned a little bit about what you did last year. What kind of success rate did you have in the involvement that you had in various elections across the country?
Tony, we were really encouraged by the success rate and the involvement of values voters last year. You probably remember a lot of the experts that be were predicting very low voter turnout. Voters just were frustrated with the whole process, all sorts of things. We saw an increase in voter turnout last year from the presidential election cycle, 4 years before that, particularly with this group I know you talk a lot about, with SageCons. We saw over 90% of them turnout. We also have FRC Action PAC, where we support good candidates for public office. And these are people that we are looking at their records, meeting with, putting our stamp of approval on. We endorsed 159, 92% of those won. So Wow. We have some great leaders to work with this year.
It's a pretty good track record there, Brent. Hope you can keep it up. Think you can beat it next time?
We will see. That's our goal. That's our goal.
Well, so. And folks, you can help him do it if you'll stay in touch and take the actions that they suggest. Brent Kylan, thanks so much for joining us today, and thanks for all the work you do.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, Tony.
And folks, thank you for joining us. And I want to encourage you to visit that website, tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources there for you. And on the way out, I leave you once again with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234. 7234.